Coming up, finals, game one, live from Boston next. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network, where we put up a new rewatchables for you on Monday night. We did Slapshot. You can listen to it on any platform, but try Spotify because it's a great platform. Or you can watch it on our Ringer Movies YouTube channel. Our next rewatchables, we're kind of veering towards 70s sports movie month here, and we're doing the classics, and we're doing one of my favorite 70s movies, Breaking Away, will be the next one. You have a few days to watch it. It has aged perfectly. It's an unbelievable movie. If you haven't seen it, I promise you'll like it. Breaking Away, that's coming Monday night. So stay tuned for that. Coming up on this podcast, my dad and I went to game one in Boston, Massachusetts, the NBA Finals, the Dallas Mavericks versus the Boston Celtics. I poured Coke into him. I gave him popcorn. He's old. Doesn't matter. Got him to stay up. And we are doing our post-game report next. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, we're taping this after game one of the NBA Finals 2024. It's 11:15 East Coast time. I'm in Boston, Massachusetts with my 76-year-old father. I told him we were doing a pod after the game, and he was like, after the game? Are you in bed now? You see, you'd be home just watching the highlights and stuff.
I would be watching the after game show. Yep.
What is your first takeaway from Celtics 107? Dallas 89, other than it was the typical roller coaster ride that the Celtics team has been on, where we ran the gamut of emotions and then somehow won by 18.
My impression sitting there was our defense was really good. And that was led, I think, by Holiday. I thought he was all over the place. And Jaylen Brown, I thought, played very good defense as well. I thought we did a good job on Doncic, even though he scored his points, but he really had to work for them. And I thought Kyrie had the typical game he's had recently in Boston in the playoffs. I thought he didn't play well. I mean, we did a good job on him.
6 for 19, 0 for 5 from three.
Yeah.
Well, the two guys that jumped out to me, Drew Holiday and Porzingis.
Yeah, Drew Holiday and Porzingis. They won the game. I will say, though, I thought Tatum had a poor game. But he played 42 minutes. I mean, he was there.
And rebounded and did stuff.
He had maybe 10 rebounds, something like that. And I thought Jaylen Brown played a very hard game.
Yeah.
His shot just wasn't falling at times. But he also must have played more than 40 minutes. So they put their time in. It's great that we don't have to play until Sunday. So Mazzola was able to keep them out there. I didn't want to see either one of them come out for defensive purposes.
Well, let's go with Drew first, because this is one of those you kind of had to be there. I'm sure it came across on TV too, yeah. But he was the alpha of the game for the Celtics. There's this moment. They're up 28 with 2 minutes left in the second quarter, and the crowd is delirious. Right. I would say that was a 10 out of 10 crowd in the first half, right?
Until 2 minutes left in the half. Yep.
Yeah, there was... Brown got nailed on a pick, got knocked down. Dallas ended up, and it just kind of changed the energy of the game. And then right. Dallas hit a couple shots. We had some bad possessions at the tail end. All of a sudden, it was 21 instead of 28 going in the half, and the crowd was like, right. Uh-oh. Second half starts. Dallas is awesome coming out of the gate, and Luka's doing Luka stuff. Right. And Joe called a timeout early with like 8 minutes left in the third. All of a sudden, it was 14. Then it got to 8. And that was the first playoff game I've been to in the Drew era. Drew was the alpha on the court. Right. And he was the alpha in the timeouts. And he was, I thought Tatum looked a little like, oh God, what's going on? Brown was, ever since he got hit by that pick, he seemed a little, just a tiny bit off. White, you know, he's a quiet guy. But I thought Drew was all over the place. And then he was just like, whoever I'm guarding is not scoring. Right. And he took over Luka, and that was it for Luka.
Yeah, he had Irving for a while, and then he took over Luka. And he made Luka a passer because Luka just couldn't get by him.
Luka a passer who had no assists. Luka had one assist. Well, and that was one of the things. Dallas only had 9 assists in that game.
You know, I can't even remember a regular season game, let alone a playoff game, where the team had the playoff team had 9 assists, less than double-digit assists.
Yeah, and we were watching it.
It's unheard of.
I don't think we really noticed till deep in the second half where we're like, it's a lot of one-on-one stuff and a lot of people passing because at the last minute they couldn't get the shot they wanted.
Well, you said something to me too. The alley-oop isn't working for them.
Yeah, Porzingis especially took the alley-oop away. But
you know, Porzingis, what a difference maker in that first half. And not only that, he got the crowd. The crowd was standing in that first half.
Yeah, the crowd was into it anyway.
Yeah, And you know, the thing about Porzingis, every time he goes up for a rebound, you get scared that he's going to come down the wrong way.
Yeah, because he had that stretch in the first half when he was just out of his mind.
Blocking shots.
48-27, and he has 15 points. There's halfway through the second quarter. He's 6-for-8, and he was just all over the place. And that was like a little before that. He hit the three. He had the block. Right. Hauser hit a three. And that was like the crowd got supercharged
by
that.
I think he had his 3 blocks in the first half. Second half, he looked not quite as sharp. They took him out.
Well, they changed how they were defending him, too.
They did, yeah.
It seemed like they were being a little more careful this minute. Drew in the first half was mostly, you know, we're doing this live. I don't take notes when we're actually watching the game. I try to take notes during timeout, but it felt like Drew was on Kyrie a lot. Yep. And then at some point in the third quarter, it became Drew on Luka. And it was interesting watching Luka, because normally he just brings the ball up, but Drew was like, I'm going 94 feet with you. You're gonna have to bring it up on me. And Luka was like, who wants to take this up a few times?
Well, when you and I talked on the phone yesterday, you pointed out that we'll play them differently than Minnesota did.
Right.
We'll hound them bringing the ball up. And that's exactly what Holiday did. And White does that also.
Yeah.
And it also had an impact of Dallas getting into their offense with fewer seconds left in the 24-second clock.
Well, a couple of things happened in that first. I mean, the KP, it was so funny. When we were talking about it, I got there super early and was talking with a bunch of people about it. I was pretty confident heading into this series, but trying not to be too confident on the podcast because who knows, KP could go down
right
5 seconds from now. But it was almost like people forgot how good he was because he hadn't played in a while. And from everything I heard talking to people today before the game, like he was going to play game 5 Indiana. Mm-hmm. I think he actually could have played game 4 Indiana if it was 2-1.
They said he almost did.
Yeah. So 10 days ago, he could have played. So you knew he was going to come out. And then the other thing was like, well, it's going to take him a while to get used to. It took him 1 second.
He missed his first shot, I think. And then he went crazy.
But you've watched him all year and you've been texting me and you've been going to a lot of these games.
Because
that was a typical KP game.
That was a typical KP game. And the kind of playoff game we didn't have last year because we didn't have that guy in the middle.
Right.
And it wasn't just offense. How many shots in that first half did he change the direction of when Dallas was near the basket? At least a half dozen.
Yeah, he came in, it was 12-11. We were 2-for-8 from three. And all of a sudden it was 37-20. And right. He had blocked a couple shots and he had changed a couple shots and just completely took their lobs away, which was a huge part of how they won the last 3 rounds.
I thought his defense was a huge factor in the way that Kyrie Irving played. Because Kyrie does the lobs. Kyrie goes in for the crazy layups. Porzingis was all over the place near the basket. And then, of course, he changes things when Dallas is on defense because they can't have a center just standing under the basket.
Right.
They have to come out.
Well, it seemed like one of the decisions they made, I don't know how intentional it was, but they were trying to put smaller guys on him so they could still protect the rim. And he was like super insulted by it.
And they had Luka on him quite a few times.
Yeah, and they had, I mean, all their 6'7", Hardy was on him once.
Jones was on him.
Yeah, Jones was on him. Yeah. But one time in the timeout, he kind of stared down their bench. I don't know if they caught it on TV, but it was after like the fifth time he had a 15-footer. And he just kind of looked over their bench like, really?
Yeah.
This is your game plan in this one?
But it's what we talked about. If they put their center on him beyond the foul line, we noticed it right away. They got grit. There was a huge rebound difference in the first half.
Yeah.
They caught up a little bit.
They only got 10 offensive rebounds. And one thing that I thought was notable was, So I wrote down 58-33, 250 left in the second quarter, but I wrote down no centers for Dallas, which I think had happened a couple minutes earlier.
They went small
ball. But in the last couple series, like, and part of it was because they didn't have Kleba, but they always had centers, and that was such a big, the lobs on offense and then the rim protection was a big reason why they won. The Celtics kind of took that away.
Right.
When they made their comeback in the third quarter, it was small ball for at least a little bit, I think.
You know, having been to so many games during the season, we have a consistent problem at the end of the half. The last two and a half minutes, I don't know what happens.
The energy died, the crowd died, and then the beginning of the third quarter too, because people aren't back in their seats yet.
They're not back in the seats. And I don't know what coaching could have done differently the last two and a half minutes, but you said it to me, we looked tired.
It was a pretty emotional game. Like, right. Even the crowd was really into it from the moment Porzingis came out of the tunnel. You were in the bathroom. It was one of your five pee breaks.
Yeah.
But Porzingis came out and the crowd was like acting like Willis Reed was coming out of the tunnel.
Right.
And then the Bill Walton thing before the game, which was great.
Very, very
moment
well
of silence for him. They play a video for him. So that was emotional.
Plus all the Celtics had Walton shirts on.
Right.
That was neat.
Which was, I kind of want one of those.
Yeah.
So the crowd's nuts for that. Then we went go on that run in the first quarter, and the crowd for about a half hour was standing, going nuts.
We ended the first quarter 37-20. We're up 17 points.
Got it to 48-27.
Yeah.
Got it to 58-33. And Porzingis had that one play. He was... honestly, looked like a video game character that like my son would have created.
He did.
He had that one play when he just on defense was flying down the other way, trying to block somebody from behind, and just jumped like. And I was like, "Oh my god!" Like, what?
Well, you and I were both saying, "I'm not sure if I want him jumping in the air."
But well, it was funny watching it. Next, we haven't gone to a playoff game together. You were, every time he went up in the air, you made a noise. Yeah. Like one of your dogs was trying to cross the street or something. You were like, oh no. It is terrifying.
It is terrifying. And, you know, you got a good look at how thin his legs are.
Yeah.
I just hope he survives Celtics in six.
He looked great. I was watching him really carefully in the warmups. They're really, really diligent about when he's not playing. Like at one point he was on, I think the bike, he was in the tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
At halftime, he was stepping on that little calf thing, but I thought he moved. I think it's like the fifth or sixth time I've seen them in person. I thought he was moving great.
Well, I also thought at least one thing I thought Mazzulla did well tonight. Whenever Dallas took their big guys out, either of the two guys, he took Porzingis out.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing was he had Drew lined up with Kyrie.
Right.
And Kyrie came out, he immediately took Drew out. Kyrie came back and he immediately put Drew back in and was just trying to... I just can't believe Milwaukee traded that guy. And I've always loved him. Anyone who's listened to this podcast, I was like always riding for Drew. Anytime I did trade value, I always had him 10 spots higher than he probably should have been. But I value what that guy does so much. When you see it in person and people look at his stats and be like, oh, he's like 10.7 rebounds, five assists, but he was the dominant guy in the game.
If you didn't watch the game and you pick up the newspaper tomorrow or you look online at the stats, you'll say, oh, Drew had a mediocre game.
Right.
And, you have to be there or you have to be watching carefully on TV.
I was texting Doc about it and, Doc Rivers and Doc said, his value is not what is seen. It's the unseen that makes him special. And I really felt that at the game, watching all the little stuff that he does, even coming out of timeouts, how, you know, like Dallas is taking the ball into their basket after a timeout or foul or whatever. And he just kind of walks all the way up and he's staring Luka down the whole time. Yeah. And he's just like, I'm here. I mean, it's almost like watching a boxer. I just loved watching him.
I do think putting aside, what did Luka have, 30 points?
Yeah.
He didn't have a winning or productive 30 points.
Right. It was a lot of one-on-one stuff all the way around.
Obviously, if they had 9 assists.
Yeah. That said, it reminded me, I think it was game 2 of the 08 Lakers-Celtics series. When we had a better team with the Lakers, and it was pretty clear. Sorry I'm saying we for everybody listening, but with my dad, we just say we. But Kobe had this stretch, I think it was game 2. And he hadn't played well. But then he kind of took over the game for like 6 minutes in the fourth quarter, and he tilted the crowd.
Right.
Where the crowd was like, oh God, what's this guy doing? And Luka had 1-3 in the third quarter where you could, that oh God feeling was in there. When they cut it to eight.
They cut it to eight with the ball.
And felt like they
I was pretty
gonna,
nervous.
Yeah, they felt like they were gonna tie the game. We gotta talk about that. Let's take a quick break. The NBA Finals, they're here. FanDuel is giving you the chance to win alongside the champs. Right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets with a winning $5 bet, $200 to use on same game parlays, live bets, so much more. I am in Boston, Massachusetts. I went to the FanDuel app. The bets just jump out at you, especially like same game parlays. You start looking at them, the future odds, they have like future parlay stuff. You can combine stuff. I did a bet with the Panthers and the Celtics. I combined that for both series, but there's no better place to bet all the finals action than America's number one sportsbook. Download the app. Take a shot at an extra $200. Go to FanDuel.com/BS to get started. FanDuel is the official sports betting partner of the NBA. You must be 21 plus, 18 plus in DC. Present in select states. Game problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. So this Celtics team, which we text a lot about, we talk on the phone a lot, and you're at pretty much all of these, any of the big games, but this, you went to a lot of the games this year.
I did this year, yeah.
And this team, which always seems to be up by 20 at some point of every game they play.
Until?
And then something happens, and all of a sudden you feel like they're down 30, and meanwhile they're up 15.
I know.
And it just feels like the sky is falling, and then they'll hit a shot. But what's interesting when you're in the building for it, the crowd kind of senses when it's going to happen, when the game's tilting, and all of a sudden you feel these nerves, and it's like just the nerves of a fan base that's watched a lot of these games, right? Well, with these guys.
When it got down to eight, it was a really quiet crowd.
Time out. And it was like, and just everybody looking at each other going, what the fuck just happened? We're up 28. They went on a 29-9 run, the Mavs.
Really? That's what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so you've been there a lot for that, where they've looked awesome.
Well, for me, a couple of consistent things happen when we give up that kind of run. We seem to stop moving the ball.
Right. And everything gets slower.
We go isolation.
Yeah.
And we're taking 3 point after 3 point after 3 point shot. And they weren't going in during that stretch. And Tatum had rebounds. He had some assists. As you said, he had 6 turnovers. But he had a bizarre game.
Well, how many times did he drive to the basket? Yes. And it seems like he could have done the Dr. J swoop layup.
5 times.
And then he was kicking it back out or trying to thread a little pass to Horford.
And three of the times it led to turnovers. He threw it out of bounds.
It's 6 turnovers.
Yeah. Why he can't finish is really puzzling.
Or why he didn't realize he could finish was almost more of the question. It's like it felt like over and over again he had layup. What was interesting about what the Mavs did, and especially when they were coming back, the refs were letting everything go. It was a really physical game.
Well, can I just cut in there?
Yeah.
We won the game.
Yeah, are you going to complain about the refs?
I thought they were terrible. I thought they were awful.
Tatum got mauled a couple times.
You know, a couple times Brown got killed.
Yeah, I just want to mention they had 16 fouls and we had 15. But I know you felt like they had 4 times as many fouls as us.
I felt that we didn't get a fair shake from the refs.
Luka definitely got a couple calls, and it's funny. I thought the crowd was going to be, by the end of the game, we hate Luka the most, but
no, they weren't.
In the second half, it was like Kyrie wasn't playing well, and the crowd was really, really savoring
it. We had that one guy about
two rows behind us. Because we're in row 3, so we're pretty close.
He was vicious on Kyrie Irving.
Well, he was like... Not like over the line vicious, but he was just kind of riding.
He wasn't swearing.
No. So Kyrie, you suck. You can't make a shot.
Kyrie,
you suck.
You have 11 points.
You have 11. You're 3 for 19. Kyrie.
And did you see Kyrie looking at him?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kyrie did a smile. And
you know what's funny? I actually liked how Kyrie played in that game. except for his shots weren't going in. But that was the best defensively I've ever seen him play in person. And he was...
Yeah. I didn't even notice him on defense.
No, but he was doing like, he was trying to get steals and he was just really active.
Yeah, he was trying to get
steals. But sometimes it backfired on him.
He had 7 or 8 fouls that weren't called.
Well, but he was taking advantage of it. It reminded me of like those Chris Paul Clipper games I used to go to where he would just, from the first minute, he's just mauling everybody. And it's like, you're either calling it or you're not calling it. But that was by far the most aggressive I've seen him. I just thought his shot wasn't going in. They missed. Luka missed some shots around the basket.
Right.
Kyrie missed a couple wide open threes that he usually makes.
KP made a huge difference around the basket.
Yeah, true. Because they were 7 for 27 from 3 with 9 assists. So if you just told me those two things, I would be like, Dallas lost. Right.
And Dallas has, in the playoffs, has been a good 3-point shooting team. Yeah.
A couple things that made me feel, you know, the history of these things is the home team looks awesome in game one. Like we beat Golden State in 22.
You and I always worry about game two.
Yeah. And then game two, there's adjustments. Yeah. But what was interesting to me about Dallas in this game, first of all, they played Hardaway, who really was buried the whole playoffs.
He was hurt. Oh, no, he was hurt.
He was hurt, but then he came back.
He played the last game. That was it. Yeah.
But they played. I guess Exum came in late, but he played 10 guys. Like he was kind of, I felt like he was kind of trying to see who made sense, which was weird because it felt like they had such a good identity coming out of the last round.
Well, Exum played in garbage time, didn't he?
He usually played for them.
Yeah, I know.
Like Hardaway played over him.
Yeah.
And then Jaden Hardy was another one that he only played 11 minutes.
He's a trick or treat guy.
But they kind of needed him in this game because they were down. But the PJ Washington, who was 0-for-3, I'm sure the OKC fans are watching this.
Washington was 0-for-3?
0-for-3 from 3. He was 5-for-11. Okay. But he missed all his threes.
Yeah.
And normally he's a corner three guy, but the Celts were kind of moving it, so he was open on the top of the key.
We covered the corner well.
Yeah. So his threes were at the top. But if I'm Dallas...
What was Luka's threes?
Luka was 4-for-12.
Okay.
10 rebounds. Where does he rank for you, scariest guys you've seen in person?
Well,
like I watched
all the Western playoff games. I didn't think this was one of his good games compared to having watched him in the other three series, despite how many points he scored. He wasn't scary tonight because we really guarded him well.
Well, that's why I didn't understand how people were discussing the series where, listen, if they're not going to shoot this badly in game two and probably have a good chance to win, but we just match up pretty well with this team. Like we have big dudes to throw at Luka and we have really good guards to throw at Kyrie and with Porzingis, real rim protection. And then the other thing, like Jalen had 2 big blocks in the second half, right? Holiday and White always end up getting blocks around the rim. Horford always gets a block. Tatum will get, like they protect the rim really well. And I felt really like people are forgetting that piece.
Yeah. I mean, Derek White is one of the best guards protecting the rim. You know, it's going to be interesting, the adjustments that are made, because I'm sure Dallas didn't expect that kind of Porzingis game.
Right. And, well, how could they? We didn't expect it.
We didn't. And it was obvious the game plan was to take Tatum out of the game. All right. So what do you do in game two? I'm hoping and expecting a big Tatum game because I think they're going to make adjustments to take to not let Porzingis hurt them so badly.
He was really unselfish in the first quarter, which I didn't mind. And he was trying to set people up.
We've
seen him do that before in these games this year and then in the second quarter, all of a sudden he'll have 15.
Right.
Right? I thought that was going to happen this game and it just didn't.
Well, it could have because you said it earlier. He got to the rim 5 or 6 times.
I felt like it was like 10.
And then passed out. He didn't used to do that. I'm not sure what's going on there. I know he's
trying. Or maybe they felt like that was an inefficiency they were trying to.
Or they had open threes, but that's fine if you're making the threes. We weren't making them so much in the second half.
Did you feel like for the people listening who haven't seen a ton of the Celtics, did you feel like that was a typical regular season Celtics, like what you saw?
Yeah,
to me that looked like that's what we watched all year, right?
Yeah, I do, with maybe the slight exception that taking the big lead like we did in the first quarter.
Yeah, but how many times have we blown big leads like that? And where all of a sudden it'll be 12 and then they'll get it back up. But
I just didn't expect it in the playoff game. That's all.
Yeah, true. Or in a finals game.
Yeah, finals game.
I guess the one, if you're looking at dark points for the Celtics, Pritchard was 0-for-7. And every minute he was in the game was terrifying because it just, Luka was like a cheetah in the wild, noticing the stray buck. Yeah. He was just like, where is that guy? Same for Kyrie.
I defend Pritchard, though. I thought he shot well most of the season. He had good looks, and they just didn't go in. But on defense.
Hauser made a couple, though.
Hauser made a couple. On defense, I'm not sure Pritchard could guard anybody on that team.
Well, definitely not their two best guys. Hauser had...
He had a couple
one or two good Luka possessions he actually stayed in front of them. I thought in general, I really liked how they guarded Luka. And it almost seemed like they kept trying to force Luka and Kyrie to the middle where they had the rim protection. And even if those guys were getting by them, they were kind of okay with it. They were just, everything was about steering them into the paint, which I thought was smart.
Well, I mean, Dallas did not have its lob game. We took that away. And Dallas did not have its open 3-point shots in the corner. We took that away. And Washington's been very efficient in the corner.
Yeah.
He certainly wasn't tonight. I love the adjustments from game one to game two, but we're going to make adjustments too. And I especially like the fact that Horford gets that extra night of rest. And so does Porzingis.
Yeah, I'm looking at, they have the make misses on, you could do the ESPN play-by-play. I mean, it looks like they only had 3 corner threes. There were 1-for-3 corner threes. And if you look at the cluster, here, look. All the threes are top of the key, basically. Yeah.
And they killed Minnesota with their corner threes.
Right. Yeah. So we took those away. Is it time? Have an announcement. Kyle, turn the TikTok camera on, even though we're doing this weird Zoom thing. Is it time to promote Joe Mazzulla from second row Joe to first row Joe?
It's too early.
No.
It's too early.
What do you mean? He's 77-20.
Somehow the lead got down to 8. We look terrible.
He called some good timeouts. I'm going to first row Joe. He's back. Come on.
On Sunday night, if we do a podcast after a second win.
You're not on Sunday's podcast.
Oh, I'm not on Sunday's
podcast. No, it's Russillo night.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then I guess I...
Well, you have to tell me in the seats.
I'm not ready to give Joe that movement up to the first row.
I thought he did a good job today. We defended Luka and Kyrie great. I thought the way he used Drew was really smart.
It was.
I thought the way he not starting Porzingis turned out to be a good one because he came in and changed the energy.
We were worried. We got to our seats. They post the starting lineup.
Yeah, and Horford starting.
And Porzingis also is not out on the floor.
The whole team comes out.
There. And nobody knows what's going on. Where's Porzingis?
Yeah, that was a rough... I forgot. I blocked that out of my mind. That was a rough 5 minutes.
I would give Joe a B-plus tonight.
A B-plus? We were up 28.
If he hadn't fallen asleep at the end of the half.
Yeah. It's a weird one because you never want to call a timeout with a minute left, but we clearly... Something bad was happening and we could all see it.
We could all see it.
And they got the 8 points down, the 7 points down at the end.
Yeah.
I am officially retiring second row Joe. I think he's done a good job. The team's 77-20.
Well, you're in a professional position where you have to schmooze with these people now.
No, I don't care about schmoozing.
I can give my honest opinion for for anybody listening.
He's way better than he was last year. And he's the way other better. Thing. Which I've noticed at other games, but especially today, that Charles Lee, who I know the Celtics absolutely love him. Charlotte's hired him
really
at the end of the year.
Miss him.
Yeah, and he's like right with them. It reminds me of like Belichick with when he had like Josh McDaniels, and they were always together next to each other.
Having been to so many games this season, the assistant coaches have made a huge difference for Mazzulla, and he has grown. I mean, I'm being a little facetious.
I like that he was getting on the refs too today because Jason got killed a couple times and
Brown.
He was really mad. Yeah, he was like screaming at them, which I don't feel like he was doing last year.
It looked like Cassell had to play mediator with the referees.
Yeah, I liked it. It was fiery. Joe Mazz.
Yeah.
I'm not calling him second row Joe anymore. He's earned my respect.
Well, you never called him that anyway.
No, I did. I called that because you were calling him second row Joe. I think you should, well, maybe after game two or game three.
Yeah, maybe.
Public apology.
Maybe after the series. How's that?
Tough crowd. Watching that game, especially when we're up 28, and I got flashbacks to 39 years ago, the Memorial Day Massacre,
which
we went to on a Sunday.
I thought the same thing. Yeah.
I took the train from Connecticut. We went to the game. We beat the Lakers by 180 points.
And we already counted that we had won the championship.
I took the train back and I was already trying to figure out what I was going to get for the 85 championship poster for my room.
And were you going to go to the Duck Hats parade and everything?
Yeah, could I get back? Should I leave school to try to come back? Yeah. And then game two, Kareem absolutely annihilated us.
We are always fearful of game two. And obviously in two of the three playoff rounds, the Celts have lost game two. So we do have an extra day of rest, which we didn't have in the last series between one and two.
Well, one thing that was like really noticeable in this game, and I had said this all week, they have five of the seven best guys in this series.
Yeah.
And Horford has a case for eight, for being the sixth best guy out of the top eight.
Well, it's an interesting point because on all the TV shows, especially the NBA show and ESPN, all they talk about, their premise is that Dallas has the two best players in the series. All right. And they forget the whole team concept.
Well, also, there's no statistical evidence for it. I was talking about it on the other pods this week. Jalen's averaging more points a game than Kyrie in the playoffs, not only this year, but for the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. And like even tonight, Jalen wasn't, you know, incredible.
He was efficient.
But he had 22 and Kyrie had 12. And this happened in the Oklahoma City series to him too. And there, I think he had a Clipper. Kyrie will have these games where he just has 11 points.
Right.
They made him work. They never really got him comfortable. He wasn't getting the free throw line. They weren't falling. He's just an amazing basketball player to watch. But he has so many different moves. Right. There was one time he had in front of the Celtic bench, Horford came out and shut him down on a corner three. And Kyrie let up for a second. So Horford let up. And then he just kind of went around him like a cat and just went baseline on him.
He did. But if I recall, there was a period where Mazzulla had the two bigs out. Porzingis and Horford out at the same time.
Yeah, you got excited for that one.
Well, because I think that was an example where Kyrie got past Horford and there's Porzingis waiting.
Right.
And it makes a huge difference.
It's weird that I still don't know what Minnesota was doing last round against them. I don't know why they didn't have Jaden McDaniels on Kyrie the entire time.
Right.
I don't know why they didn't play Naz Reid more and try to have him on Luka. I don't know why Gobert was so ineffective in that series because Porzingis made such a difference with his...
Well, Gobert has no outside shot.
No, I'm just saying defensively.
Yeah, defensively.
Like he's as good of a rim protector as Porzingis, but Porzingis looked like 7'3" Bill Russell. That was another thing that made us feel good about this game. In the set, they do the Heroes Among Us in the second quarter.
Oh, yeah,
and Chara came out, the beloved Bruin. Who is 6'9" defenseman? Who was incredible, but he was wearing the Porzingis jersey,
and he kept pulling it out and showing people, and he looked like he could suit up and play for the Celtics tonight.
Yeah,
I mean he's in great shape, runs marathons.
It was interesting talking to. I got there like 3.5 hours early, and I was trying to talk to a bunch of people, but especially the Celtics heard everything during this break. Like they knew.
I'm glad to hear that.
I think Tatum, you know, because what happens is, and you forget this, it's not like a Kevin Durant situation where the guy's online looking and, you know, I think KD would admit he's online probably a little too much. I don't know if the Celtics are online, but their family members and their friends are. And so they hear everything. So when there's stuff like Kyrie and Luka are the two best guys in the series, people are telling Jalen and Tatum that, or they're saying Tatum, you know, you're not a top five player. So I thought Jalen seemed like he translated it a little more personally tonight. Tatum, I could see having a big game too.
In game two. I read today something along that line in the paper that Tatum tries to stay away from reading about all that, but his mother doesn't.
No, his mother's.
And his mother was all over
his mother sees everything.
Very upset.
She's mad. I actually met her tonight and somebody said, He's one of the national guys who's actually defending. I was like, yeah, but I'll take credit for that. Yeah. But she was a nice lady. We'll take one more break, and then I want to talk about your 10th finals. And now it's time for a special part of today's episode. It's called Outside the Box. It's brought to you by Sonic. Sometimes we have to leave the mundane behind. We have to explore the unknown, try those crazy ideas, like the new groovy fries from Sonic with the crispy outside of a tot. Gotta love a tot. And the dippability of a fry. Each groovy groove is designed to hold more sauce. We wouldn't have these hot and crispy goodies or their new groovy sauce without a little experimentation. Right now, you can get any size groovy fry for $1. And Sonic isn't the only one breaking the mold. You might have seen, think about the innovations we saw, right, during the NBA playoffs so far. We saw Oklahoma City trying to spread Dallas out with SGA. We saw the Jokic and Murray just trying to do the two-man game. We saw Minnesota solve Denver and try to see how to beat them with size and with some timely threes. And then really, the most innovative team of all them is Dallas, the way they've been using Luka, the way they've been using their bigs to try to get mismatches at the top of the key. That's the thing about basketball. As the three-point shooting gets better, the innovation, the spacing, the switching, how you defend people, you got to push those boundaries. A little like what Sonic's doing. Outside the Box, brought to you by Sonic. Remember, when you want innovation in the kitchen, you go to Sonic. They're always looking for delicious, fun, new ways to make food even more enjoyable, like their latest creation, the Groovy Fries. Hot, crispy, perfectly salted, made to hold all the sauce you want, which is perfect because Sonic also has, again, a new groovy sauce. It's creamy with a little kick, a thrilling, tasty addition to any meal. Get any size groovy fry for $1. And don't forget to ask for groovy sauce. Live free. Eat Sonic. Tax not included. Limited time offer. All right. So you've had season tickets 51 years. This is your 10th finals.
The first year, I've said this before, we got the tickets, 73-74.
Title.
We made the finals. And
this is 50 years later.
And I did take you. I did carry you into one of those games. I mean, you were.
All right, I believe you.
Yeah,
you're about. I was four.
Four and a half. Yeah.
I don't have a lot of memories of that one. I remember the next season, the 76 season, but I don't remember 74. Yeah, so we won a title the first year with one ticket. And then
2 years later.
So your finals record is 5-4.
Yeah,
I thought it was better. For some reason, I felt like you were 6-3 or 6, but yeah, 5-4 is the record right now.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. Lost in 22, 10, 87, 85.
Yeah.
3 to the Lakers. Fucking assholes.
Well, that hook shot. I still have nightmares about Magic's hook shot.
And well, then, how about
0-10?
I made the mistake of flying you to L.A. for 6-7.
Well, suddenly Artest makes a big shot at the end of the game. Yeah. I mean, really?
Rasheed Wallace huffing and puffing.
Yeah.
35 minutes of Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah.
Tough one. But haven't won a title in 16 years. And this has been the best team in the league since the season started.
Yeah. We have a lot on the line.
That's how I felt walking around the city all day today and talking to people. And it just feels like you could feel the pressure when they started chipping away in that.
You could
in
feel
that
the
third quarter. You could where feel it. Ugh.
Yeah. You know, it might have been one of the best playoff crowds I can remember at starting the game. But when they cut it to 8, everybody was nervous.
Yeah.
I mean, you could feel the tension in the crowd. And I'll have to watch it. I taped it. I can't quite remember how we went from 8 all the way up to 20 so quickly, but we did.
I took notes during that. It was 72-64, 4:27 left. Then the 80-64, Tatum 3. That's when they put Drew on Luka. 5 lively fouls. And that's when I wrote my notes. Drew was kind of the alpha. Because when it was 72-64 and the crowd was kind of zombies, and that was, we were watching the huddle and and Mazzulla and those guys were all on the court, the coaches.
I said to you, look at
that. And you were like, Horford was really into it and Tatum was animated.
Tatum was
and
very
Drew,
animated.
They were all like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Then Drew was just like, I'm guarding Luka now. And that was it.
Yeah, it must have
been. And Luka had 27. He finished with 30. Yeah. Only had 3 points after that.
It was fascinating to watch that huddle because, just like you said, the coaches weren't near the five players. And it looked like the five players made decisions on what right. was going to happen next, including Holiday was going to guard Luka. Tatum was going to come out more aggressively. I said to you, because it, I don't think it's happened all season, neither Tatum nor Brown came out in the third quarter. That,
right.
That never, ever happens.
Right.
He always staggers them.
First row Joe. Do a little tweak for you.
I'll give him that.
It's a pretty good one.
I'll give him that.
Yeah, because in the regular season, he would have done the stubborn, this is where I put my guys in and we don't deviate from what we do.
Yes. Yeah.
And he did not do that.
Maybe the assistant coaches told him to do it.
Well, the thing we were talking about, because Luka and Kyrie, they shot their wide with those guys too the whole third quarter, especially
Luka. But
they
come out. They come in and
Luka played the whole third quarter, I think.
Oh,
I think he did. I want to say he did.
Well, I think Irving came out, if I recall.
But I think when you have the game two's not till Sunday, you can get a little more frisky with your big minutes guys, right? If we're playing Saturday night, it's a little different.
A little different. We took their big guys out of the game. Gafford, I remember him having
Well, it seemed like they wanted they cared more about Lively, Dallas.
And Lively got the
They put him, when he had five fouls, they put him back. There was a lot of time left. They were like, we're shooting our wide with this one now.
But I thought Porzingis had his number, at least in game one.
What do y'all say about Lively? Who, you know, I really think he's a gem. Like that was turned out to be a great pick.
What a great pick, yeah.
He was not afraid.
Right.
He was super physical. I thought he was setting really hard, like borderline.
I think he
kind of flagrant picks.
He made about 12 fouls.
He was really physical. But you normally like these 20-year-old centers would come into a finals game like that with the way the crowd was. I was even watching him during the national anthem. And he was like hopping up and down and nodding. Like he did not seem scared at all.
I think he got a lot of confidence from the Minnesota series.
Yeah. Yeah, he's good. I mean, even if he's just this for the next 5 years, like that's an asset. But
the one thing neither one can shoot away from the rim.
Right.
I mean, that is hard in this era, the way centers are shooting. 3-point shots.
And with the kind of defense the Celtics have.
Yeah.
Watching Luka, and we've seen so many great players over the last 51 years. I mean, first year season tickets beat Kareem in the finals when he's at his apex. We had 76. That was McAdoo's last great year. Right. Going through Dr. J with those Philly teams.
Well,
Kareem and Magic.
Tony, Boston
Andrew
Strangler.
Tony, who absolutely killed us.
Yeah.
With Dominique at his actual peak. We saw Jordan as he was turning to Jordan Doncic, Isaiah.
Doncic might have 50 points Sunday night, but he did not control tonight's game.
But could absolutely have 50 points.
Yeah.
Who does he remind you of? Because to me, especially watch this, that's I think the third Mavs game I've seen for playoffs in person. There's a lot of Bird with him.
A lot of Bird with him, except Bird didn't control the ball like he does.
No. He never wanted to. He always wanted the ball to move around.
I mean, and that's why they had 9 assists, because they did an awful lot of isolation, which was not to their benefit. Luke is scary because he's a lot bigger than you think. I don't think on TV you can appreciate how big he is.
He looks like he's a tight end. Not even like a blocking tight end, not even like a Travis Kelce type tight end.
And the way he dribbles low to the ground, all of a sudden he's 2 feet from the basket.
Yeah. He had a couple really good defensive plays where he like stripped, they're trying to hunt him and post him up. And he foiled Porzingis.
We stripped him a couple
Jaylen.
Of times too.
We did.
Yeah.
So where does he rank for you? Who's number one for you? Who's your number one scariest opponent in 51 years?
Oh. But you have to. It has to be related to a specific series. Andrew Toney.
Wow.
I mean,
people are listening to this going, who?
Yeah. I mean, he won that series for Philadelphia that year.
Because it was twos too.
Yeah,
it wasn't
threes. It was twos.
It was just 18 footers and 14 footers and layups.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might agree with you, actually. I think he might have been, because even Kobe did fine against us, but I never felt like we couldn't stop him.
Well, game 7, 2010, that was not Kobe winning the game for them.
I guess 2012, LeBron, when he annihilated us. That's LeBron's got to be in there.
LeBron,
LeBron.
I guess for a career of watching playoff games against us, it has to be LeBron. I mean, you and I, what year was it?
2012, game 6.
We're up 3-2.
Well, also 2018, game 7, when he basically beat us by himself.
By himself, yeah.
Although we missed like 43s.
Yeah.
That wasn't great.
Both of those series.
Yeah, he was awesome.
The one time we got his number was 2008, when he had the Manu a Manu against Pierce.
I think my number one of overall the years was Kareem. Kareem, I just never felt like ever we could stop him. As a little kid, never felt that way. Then I remember in 85, it just felt like he just owned Parrish.
Well, it's just what you said, the Memorial Day Massacre that we killed L.A. Who came back and killed us in game 2?
Game 2 is Kareem. Yeah, he brought his dad. It was a famous story. Brought his dad on the bus, and they saw his dad on the bus. They were like, uh-oh.
Oh, I didn't
the
hear
Lakers.
That story.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, his dad, they just sat in the front next to each other, and like Magic and those guys were like, uh-oh.
He killed us. He killed us, yeah.
Although Walton was, that was one of the fun things about that 86 season and why we were so sad we didn't play them in the finals, because Walton really went at him. And right. They had that whole UCLA background. He beat him in 77.
It would have been great. And Walton played, if I recall, 80 of 82 regular season games that year. And
do you remember, I talked when I did the Walton tribute, I talked about that Portland game we went to when I was 8 when they beat us. It felt like they beat us by like 100 points. And it was like the best team either one of us had ever seen.
I thought, my memory of that game, and I think we made a joke about it, we were the Washington Generals and they were all in Globetrotters. That's how it felt that game.
It was so dispiriting. And it was the first year we were really sucking, and it felt like that was the nail in the coffin. Like, it was Havlicek's last year. It was like, not only are we not going to win the title, we're not going to make the playoffs.
But I think we also, as basketball fans, left that game saying, boy, that team really plays.
Yeah, that's a special team.
That's a special team. A special team that plays teamwork game that you never see anymore. That was a great game.
Was he the best college player you saw, or was it Maravich?
Probably Maravich, Alcindor, and Walton. It's tough to... I mean, Maravich didn't win the titles. Those two guys won.
Yeah, but you said Maravich was like appointment TV on the weekends.
Well, I mean, it was an era when there was no cable, and there was one college game on Saturday afternoon. And every Saturday afternoon, it was Maravich.
Right.
Because he was must-see television.
It sounded fun. It sounded like the men's equivalent of whatever happened with Caitlin Clark there in the tournament, where it was just you kind of had to see what was happening. Yeah, the Walton thing, I remember when they when we traded Maxwell for him, and we were so disillusioned with Maxwell because he really killed us in 85.
Right.
Because he was hurt. He didn't have like a torn ACL, but he was just not in shape the whole year. And he really hurt them in the playoffs. You know, he just never really... Some guys just have trouble coming back from injuries, and he just couldn't do it. And flipping him into Walton, we were like, whoa.
Right.
Because he'd had a good season with the Clippers, but then... And I was living in Connecticut. I was going to high school in Connecticut that year, but you were going to all those games, and you were just, I was trying to watch as many as I could. It wasn't the same. We didn't have league pass in 1986.
Well, a friend of mine was asking me about Walton when he played that year, and what do I remember? And it's funny. I certainly remember him playing, but the thing I remember most were his four sons.
His crazy kids
right next to us. And they were out of control.
You're right.
The Ushers could not control. One of them became coach of the Lakers.
Yeah, Luke Walton.
But those four kids were totally out of control.
I remember I had Luke Walton on the podcast and told him they sat on the other side of the runway with us, and we would just laugh because they were like the Von Erichs. They're like doing flying elbows on each other.
Yeah, jumping into other aisles.
I remember Luke was at UCLA, and I was like, Dad, remember those Luke Walton's kids? One of them's like an All-American in college.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah. But that was a really, really special year. I was glad they honored him. It's weird to think of somebody as, like, they called him one of the greatest Celtics.
I thought that was neat.
And I think that's it's fair. It was one of the greatest Celtics careers, but he's certainly one of the best 10 guys who ever played for the Celtics.
And I think his experience here was the coup de grace of his career.
Yeah.
It meant so much to him.
I told you this, that when he would call the Celtics, like asking for, I'm coming into town, can I get tickets or whatever? And whoever answered, he's like, Bill Walton, class of 1986. That's how he would identify himself on the phone. But it was cool. I kind of felt like they were going to win tonight with all the Walton stuff. Right. It was like, all right, this is good karma.
Well, I'll throw you out something. This week, I reread the epilogue of your book.
Oh, my basketball book, yeah.
About Bill Walton. And it was very meaningful. Very sad to see that he passed.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about, I got to read Breaks of the Game again now, but, you know, he's such a big part of that book. And I don't know how many times I read that book, but the what if potential of him was one of the things that I grew up with. And it was, you know, out of all the great players ever, it's like him, Len Bias, there's only a couple where you're like, man.
He got his two championships.
Yeah. Samson's a little like that too. I really felt like Samson was not on the Walton like all-time level, but you think of like certain, like Derrick Rose is like that. These guys, Grant Hill is a good one.
Yeah.
Grant Hill was incredible.
There's a lot of guys like that.
But he was, out of all the what if guys, he was the most talented, I think. All right. What's your prediction for game two?
My prediction for game two is that Tatum has a really big game. And
Like a pounding it in the basket, like controlling.
Okay. Yeah, and that he looks at the tape of game one and says, I could have had 7 layups.
Right.
What was I doing? I hope that's what he does. That's what I would do if I was looking at the tape.
Scale of 1 to 10, how horrified are you going to be to see Scott Foster? Who's your least favorite? Oh, Mark Davis is your least favorite.
Mark Davis is my least favorite.
We'll probably see him.
Although, again, I think it's okay to criticize referees when you won the game. I just thought I thought Dallas could have been called for twice as many fouls as they did.
We won by 18. I'm just going to
I know.
See, people listening, this is where I get it from. When you say make excuses for the other team. Yeah, now it's probably a Mark Davis Sunday game two.
I think it's probably Scott Foster. They always seem to throw him in when
you don't think
team,
he gets 4 and 7? There's 12 refs. So
okay. So somebody's gonna get 2 games.
I think a few people will get 2 games.
You see, they may be worried that there isn't a game 7. And Scott Foster is one of their more veteran refs. I don't know.
Well, game two, Sunday.
Didn't they
3
throw
days
him out
away
in the Minnesota game two?
They did try to activate the Foster extension and it didn't work. You were the most afraid of, I'm not jinxing anything here. You were the most afraid of Denver.
I was.
In the West.
I was.
Jokic terrifies you because you went to that Denver game.
I thought Denver, you know, we're just talking about that Portland 77 team. I thought Denver played a little bit like that, the way they move the ball around. I'm still shocked that they lost to that Minnesota team.
I still don't understand it.
Yeah.
Because then you watch Minnesota just lay an egg in the next round. Not just like that they didn't play well, but some of their strategy stuff was bad. I don't know how
they
beat Denver.
Coaching was bad.
Did they do it?
No teamwork. A lot of isolation with Edwards. I don't know how they did it.
And how did he play as well as he was playing for some of that series? Because then he crashed to earth.
Yeah, deer in the headlight in the Dallas series.
And how do you beat Denver when you have the knucklehead factor of some of the guys on that team too? You know, like Towns was so bad in round 3.
Right. All season long, you and I said, God, I hope it's not Denver. Well, it ended up not being Denver. I never thought it'd be Dallas. I thought it'd be Oklahoma City. Yeah,
Celtics win. It's now past midnight. I got to get you home.
What's your prediction for game two?
I'm terrified of Luka. Yeah. I do think I think they've at least solved Kyrie's not going to go off. They're too disciplined with how they're defending him. They have too many good guys and they have rim protection. But the Luka,
yeah,
he's just impossible. I thought he wore down as the game went along, and maybe it was part of it, like some of the stuff they were doing, trying to force him to play defense in certain ways.
I said that to you. I thought,
yeah,
I thought Dallas looked tired in the fourth quarter.
So yeah, maybe Dallas will try to figure out some stuff with that. I'm trying to think. It's always about, there was a game two, it's about the adjustments. I'm trying to think what their adjustments would be, other than they're going to have to figure out a different Porzingis plan.
Right.
And
I don't
then,
think they had a plan.
And they're going to have to figure out how to have better ball movement, because you're just never winning a game with nine assists.
If I'm Jason Kidd, who is one of the best point guards ever, and I'm talking to my team after that game or in preparation for Sunday,
yeah,
I'm saying, we had nine assists, guys.
Right.
What the hell? That's not team basketball.
Well, I wonder if they'll try to move Luka a little further down too, to try to get him kind of like what we were saying. They should, that we never understand why the Celtics don't do more with Tatum, is post him up on the foul line. He's so good on the foul line.
Right.
Because he can spin and go to the basket or do little fallbacks. Yeah. And when he's 25 feet from the basket, I just don't like it as much. But I think with Luka, it's a mix of that, like just trying to get him the ball in different spots. And then they got to figure out the corner threes.
Right.
How did we take those away? How do you get him back?
Right.
Well, how late are you going to be up tonight? I feel like you're going to rewatch the game. It could be a 3 o'clock night for you.
I'll watch it tomorrow morning. Yeah, I'm bedtime.
All right, 10th finals for my dad.
All right.
We got to win.
This was fun.
We're going Sunday night.
I guess Russolo's taking my place. I guess
Russolo's taking your place. I think we're activating you for game five.
Okay, sounds good.
Monday, game five. Thanks to Kyle Creighton and Steve Cerruti for producing. We're going to be back Sunday on the podcast. Don't forget, you can watch all the clips from this on youtube.com/@BillSimmons. And don't forget about the rewatchables on the movies YouTube feed as well. Have a great weekend. Go Celts. Must be 21 plus, 18 plus DC, and present in select states. FanDuel offering online sports wagering Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG. In Colorado, DC, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 533-42 in Arizona. 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 877-770-STOP in Louisiana, mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, 800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, 800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.